I've loved animals and the natural world for as long as I can remember. Since I was a little kid, and maybe this is true for you too. But I haven't always been as obsessed with birds as I am now. Don't get me wrong, I never disliked birds. I definitely appreciated them, but I just didn't spend much time looking at them, or really truly listening to them. One breakthrough happened for me when I was working on my master's degree in biology. This was a couple decades ago, in Southern California. One day, I was walking across campus with Tony, my advisor. I was his graduate student, and I spent countless hours in his lab. We're walking along, and suddenly Tony stops. He points up to the sky and says, "Do you hear that?" "No, what are you talking about?" I say. "Those are cedar waxwings calling," he says with a wide grin. I listen again, and then, yes, I hear a soft, high-pitched sound. "Oh, you mean that?" I ask. We never even saw the birds. But I was in awe of Tony's ability to A, detect that faint bird call from among all the other sounds on a busy college campus, and B, instantly know which species was making it. My little mind was blown. You see, Tony was and is a serious birder. Back then, he was the president of the local chapter of the Audubon Society. But I wasn't a birder yet in those days. I kind of wish I had been, because I'm sure I could have learned a lot more about birds from Tony. I like to think I've come a long way since then. Now I know most of the songs and calls of my local bird species. And I get a little tickle of satisfaction and happiness every time I hear cedar waxwings fly overhead. Now I'm the one who points out waxwings calls to other people. It seems that the student has become the master. And in fact, I even have a master's degree to prove it. Just kidding. I mean, I did get the master's degree, but I feel like I'll always be a student when it comes to birds and to the natural world in general. There will always be more to learn. But I'm so grateful to Tony and to those cedar waxwings for inviting me to be more aware of birds and to get to know them by their sounds. Hello and welcome. This is the Science of Birds. I am your host, Ivan Philipson. The Science of Birds podcast is a lighthearted exploration of bird biology for lifelong learners. This is episode 65, and it's all about waxwings, birds in the family Bombycidae. The cedar waxwing is one species, and there are two others that we'll talk about. These beautiful, elegant songbirds are loved by people across the Northern Hemisphere. Waxwings are easy on the eyes, for sure, and that's great. I mean, personally, I think they're just about the most gorgeous songbirds we have in North America. But their biology is also really interesting. So much of how waxwings live and behave is dictated by what they eat, by their specialized diet. What is that special diet? Is it maybe something like scorpions, psychedelic mushrooms, or the blood of their enemies? No, nothing quite so exciting as all that. Waxwings specialize in eating fruit, mostly sweet berries. So join me, my friend, as we step into the world of the waxwings to learn about how they eat, how they breed, how they sound, and more. There are just three waxwing species in the world. The cedar waxwing, Bombycilla cedrorum, the Bohemian waxwing, Bombycilla garrulus, and the Japanese waxwing, Bombycilla japonica. Superficially, these species all look very similar, and as far as we know, they share most features of their biology. All waxwings are medium-sized songbirds. The smallest is the cedar waxwing, at 6.1 inches long, beak to tail. That's 15.5 centimeters. The largest is the Bohemian waxwing, at 8.1 inches, or 20.5 centimeters. The Japanese waxwing is intermediate between those two. The body and wing shape of a waxwing are pretty typical for a songbird that lives at the edges of forests. But it has a prominent crest on its head, sort of like a blue jay or northern cardinal or crested tit. The bill is small and dark-colored, and the tail has a squared-off tip. To me, a waxwing has an overall satin-smooth and streamlined look, like all of its rough edges were sanded down or something. The plumage of waxwings is brownish-pink overall. You can't really see the outlines of the contour feathers. They all just blend together into a uniform creaminess, for lack of a better word. Now, this might seem silly, but the car I drive is a pickup truck. Well, I mean, that's not the silly part. Some would say it's actually cool to drive a truck. But I named my truck, named it Waxwing, seriously, because it's a tan sort of light brown color that reminds me of the bird. And the roof rack on top is vaguely reminiscent of a waxwing's head crest. But it's normal to name your car, right? Tell me I'm not alone here. I'm sure that, like me, you name all sorts of things around your house. My toothbrush, for example, is Mr. Bristles, and my toaster's name is Travis. But never mind. Waxwings, the birds, are way more colorful than just being all silky brown like some cool guy's truck. Cedar and Japanese waxwings have some yellow on their bellies. And all three species have bold black and white markings around the eyes and on the chin and throat. The black around the eyes looks sort of like a little superhero mask. The wings, too, have some bold black, white, gray, and, in the case of the Bohemian waxwing, yellow markings. The tips of the gray tail feathers are bright yellow in cedar and Bohemian waxwings, whereas the Japanese species has a red tail tip. All of these birds look like they dipped their tails ever so slightly into a can of bright colored paint. But okay, what about the wax, man? Why are these birds called waxwings? Well, adult cedar and Bohemian waxwings have some wing feathers that appear to have droplets of red wax at their tips. These are feathers of the inner wing, what we call secondary feathers, or just secondaries. The number of secondaries that have these waxy nubs is variable from one individual to the next. It depends on the age of the bird. Roughly speaking, birds with less than 6 waxy nublets per wing are immature. More than 8 or 9, and you've got yourself a mature individual. The older the waxwing, the more waxy-tipped feathers it has. The droplet-like feather appendages we're talking about aren't really made of wax, though. These structures are actually part of the feather shaft, the rachis, which means the waxy nubs are made of the protein keratin, not wax. Something waxy isn't necessarily made of wax, right? Just like candy labeled chocolatey is like chocolate, but not actual chocolate. It's chocolate-ish, chocolate-adjacent. Chocolatey is used as a devious marketing ploy to make you think the hollow Easter bunny you found in the bargain bin at the dollar store is made of real chocolate. Sorry, it's not. I'm pretty sure the main ingredient is actually sawdust.
Yuck!
So maybe, to be scientifically more accurate, we should have named these birds waxy wings instead. In any case, each of the red nubs is the wide, flat tip of the feather shaft. It includes a number of tiny branches, or technically barbs, that have fused together into a glossy little keratin droplet. Like a tiny lozenge-shaped amulet. And hey, if you need a refresher on words like rachis and barb, you can check out episode 13 of this podcast, which is titled Feathers, Form and Function. The red color of the waxy feather tips comes from a carotenoid pigment called astaxanthin. Remember that many of the red, orange, and yellow colors we see in birds come from carotenoid pigments. And the ultimate source of those pigments is the diet of the birds, often from plant products like seeds and berries. The waxy nubs and colorful tail tips of waxwings are ornaments that most likely have important meanings to the birds. It seems that they're social signals. They reflect a bird's age and social status. Older waxwings have more waxy nubs, right? Researchers have found that mature waxwings pair up with other mature waxwings. Likewise, younger birds with fewer nubs pair up with other young birds. Those more mature pairs tend to be more successful in raising offspring. They nest earlier and fledge more chicks. So it's possible that waxwings are using those feather ornaments as a way to choose their mates. Interestingly, the secondary feathers of Japanese waxwings rarely have waxy tips. But they do have small red spots of color in those feathers in pretty much the same location. As I mentioned, cedar and Bohemian waxwings have yellow tail tips. But occasionally, at least with cedar waxwings, a bird shows up with a tail tip that's orange. Not yellow, orange. Is it orange or orange? How do you say it? Orange? Let's go with orange. I don't know. But this phenomenon, this only started happening about 4 or 5 decades ago, this orange tail tip thing. What's up with that? Well, we know the color of the tail tip comes from carotenoid pigments. And those pigments are derived from the things waxwings eat, berries and such. It turns out there's a plant that humans introduced to North America from Asia, which has become an invasive species. It's called Moro's honeysuckle, or Japanese honeysuckle. Waxwings love to gobble up those honeysuckle berries. And when they do, they eventually end up with orange tail tips. That's because Moro's honeysuckle berries contain a red carotenoid pigment called rhodoxanthin. Waxwings can't really process rhodoxanthin to turn it into a yellow pigment. So red rhodoxanthin mixes with some of the normal yellow pigments, and you get orange. As always, I'll put some photos of the birds I'm talking about in the show notes for this episode on the Science of Birds website. Check them out, especially if you don't know what a waxwing looks like. They're gorgeous birds. That was a lot about what waxwings look like. Now let's talk a little about their behavior and their voices. These are social birds that often gather in large flocks, especially in winter. But they also build their nests in small, loose groups in the summer. The scientific name of the Bohemian waxwing is Bombycilla garrulus. That second word is a nod to the social nature of these birds. Garrulus comes from the Latin and refers to the chattering and babbling sounds that Bohemian waxwings make when together in a flock. They're talkative little buggers. Even in English, garrulus means excessively talkative, especially about trivial things. You can probably think of a few garrulous people you've come across in your life. This fact that waxwings gather in large winter flocks is a great example of a behavior that reflects their specialized diet. The small fruits and berries they eat are locally abundant. Some biologists use the term superabundant. But this resource is, at the same time, haphazardly scattered across the countryside. Trees and shrubs with ripe fruit on their branches are found only here and there, at least in the winter. Traveling in a flock makes finding food more likely than going it alone. And when a flock of waxwings finds a tree or bush full of berries, the birds are surprisingly courteous with each other. They don't squabble over berries or beat each other up in competitive fights for dominance. They're generally docile, calm, and cooperative. Waxwings all just stuff their little gullets full of sweet berries, and life is good. There's no need to fight for a limited resource when the resource isn't very limited, when it's super abundant. A second aspect of waxwing biology related to their fruit-tastic diet is their vocal sounds. Even though waxwings are technically songbirds, in the genetic evolutionary sense, they don't sing. That is, waxwings don't use ritualized vocal displays to establish and defend a territory. Not having a song is a highly unusual characteristic for a songbird. These peace-loving little hippies just aren't territorial. There's so much fruit to go around, who needs to get all uptight and try to keep a tree or berry patch all to themselves? But waxwings still have a thing or two to say to each other. They may not sing, but they do have plenty of calls. These vocal sounds are used to communicate in different social contexts. For example, subtly different calls are used during flocking, nest building, and courtship. To human ears, most waxwing calls sound pretty dang similar. But we can usually notice enough differences among them to sort them into two categories. First, there's the bzee category. That's B-Z-E-E-E. Bzee calls are more buzzy and have a little bit of a rattle to them. Here's an example. Now, all of the calls I'm going to play for you are pretty high-pitched, so I'm sorry if they're hard to hear or if they're a bit shrill. Okay, here's an example of a bzee call. This is a couple cedar waxwings calling while scarfing berries in a small tree. And then there's the see call, S-E-E-E. See calls are higher pitched and softer, more of a hissing whistle. Here are some see calls being made by a little flock of cedar waxwings. They're in a thicket of sumac plants at the edge of a prairie in Minnesota. The calls of Bohemian and Japanese waxwings are similar to those of the cedar waxwing. Here's a flock of about 100 Bohemian waxwings, also in Minnesota. They're making bzee calls as they sit in an aspen tree. And here are some Japanese waxwings, recorded near Shanghai, China. They're making what sounds to me like both types of call. Z and C. The name of the taxonomic family for waxwings is Bombycillidae. Now, a word of advice, and I hope this would be common sense. Never say the name of this bird family, Bombycillidae, out loud in an airport. Not unless you want to get tased by security and tackled to the ground. Nobody's going to believe that you were just talking about birds. Bombycillidae comes from the genus name Bombycilla. The genus is spelled B-O-M-B, like the thing that goes boom, followed by Y-C-I-L-L-A, Bombycilla. There seems to be some confusion among scholars about the origin of the word Bombycilla. But after some research, my understanding is that it's supposed to mean silk tail in Latin. The Latin for Bird Lovers book on my shelf, however, would have me believe that Bombycilla means silk hair. See? Confusion! So which is it, silk tail or silk hair? Who are we to believe? Is there some deep conspiracy at work here? Probably. But thankfully, there's a bit less confusion about the relationship of waxwings to other songbirds. The family most closely related to the waxwing family is Tilaganatidae. That's got a silent P at the beginning, Tilaganatidae. These are the silky flycatchers. The Phainopepla of the desert southwest in North America is in this silky flycatcher family. There are five other bird families that are closely related to the waxwing family. All of them are in the Old World, and each contains a total of one species. These five relatively obscure families, lumped together with Bombycillidae and Tilaganatidae, make up something called a superfamily. You know, a superfamily, like the characters in the Incredibles movie from Pixar. Just like that. Except, not at all. Birds in this superfamily, disappointingly, don't have abilities like super strength, invisibility, or eyes that shoot lasers. The name of this superfamily is Bombycilloidea. That's a mouthful, I know. Bombycelloidea is a unique branch of the avian tree of life. A superfamily like this is a lineage that's more inclusive than a family, but less inclusive than an order. The ancestral bird species that gave rise to the Bombycelloidea superfamily lived about 25 million years ago, somewhere in Eurasia. Eventually, its descendants diversified and some spread into North America. Zooming back in to focus just on the birds in the waxwing family, we see that all three species are found only in the northern hemisphere. The cedar waxwing is a North American species. These guys live year-round in the northern U.S., but not as far north as Alaska. Some populations migrate north into the boreal forests of Canada to breed. In winter, a bunch of them migrate to the southern U.S., Mexico, or Central America. Bohemian waxwings also live in North America, but this species' range is much larger. It extends all the way around the northern hemisphere. Bohemian waxwings breed in northern Canada, Alaska, and northern Eurasia. In the winter, they retreat to the south a bit to escape the most severe winter conditions. The Japanese waxwing has the smallest range of the three. It breeds only in southeastern Russia and a small part of northeastern China. In the non-breeding season, Japanese waxwings live throughout Japan, Korea, and a bit of eastern China. The three waxwing species do show some migratory behavior, as I've mentioned, moving north in summer and south in winter. But these birds are also well known for their nomadic wanderings. In the winter months, flocks of waxwings travel around searching for some sugar-packed berries. Trees loaded with lingering, uneaten fruit crops are available only sporadically across the landscape in winter. So waxwings have to wander far and wide to find them. That's where the name Bohemian waxwing came from. These little vagabonds live a boho lifestyle, unconventional and carefree. If they could, Bohemian waxwings would probably drive around together in a caravan of tiny Volkswagen buses with flowers and peace signs painted on the side. No doubt the radios in the buses would be continually blasting Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. These nomadic winter flocks might include just a handful of waxwings, or they can be several thousand strong. Flocks can show up out of nowhere, even in places like deserts, agricultural areas, or suburban parks. As long as there are some trees or shrubs with berries, the waxwings will be able to find them. The birds swarm in like locusts, gorge themselves until every last berry is gone, then they move on. They leave only devastation in their wake. Well, devastation and poop, I suppose. In terms of habitat, all three waxwing species tend to live near the edges of forests, deciduous forests, coniferous forests, or woodlands. Even our gardens, parks, and old shrubby fields will do. As long as there are plants with fruit around, there's a good chance the waxwings will be there. During the summer breeding season, cedar and boho waxwings prefer to nest in trees where there's some water nearby, such as a stream, lake, or swamp. Turning our attention now to the conservation of waxwings. For once, it seems, the situation isn't especially dire. Both cedar and Bohemian waxwings are still common species across much of their respective ranges. These two species are estimated to have worldwide populations in the tens of millions. And, luckily, their numbers are stable or even increasing in some regions. The cedar waxwing's population dynamics are the most well understood. The growth in populations of this species is likely the result of several things. 1. The increasing number of fruit trees and shrubs in suburban and urban areas. This includes native plants, but also a lot of introduced ornamental plants. 2. The increase in forest edge habitat as forests are continuing to be fragmented by human activity. And 3, the natural transformation of abandoned agricultural fields back into shrublands and forests. So all of that is true for the cedar waxwing. The Japanese waxwing, Bombycilla japonica, isn't as well off. This species is in the near-threatened category on the IUCN Red List. We don't have a good estimate of the Japanese waxwing's total population, but it's thought to be relatively small, in part because its breeding range isn't all that large. The two biggest threats to the Japanese waxwing are habitat loss from logging and the wild bird trade. These beautiful birds are captured in places like China and then sold in foreign markets. For example, over 5,000 Japanese waxwings ended up being imported to the European Union over the last 30 years. But who knows how many ended up in other markets? Removing that many Japanese waxwings from the wild could put this species at risk of a steep decline. Threats to waxwings in general include window collisions, collisions with cars, pesticides, and even poisoning by non-native plants. For example, dozens of cedar waxwings in the state of Georgia died from eating the berries of a plant called nandina. This is a non-native invasive weed. Nandina berries contain the poison hydrogen cyanide in low concentrations. But waxwings eat so many fruits all at once, nandina berries can make for a terrible last meal for these birds. By now, you know that waxwings are frugivores, birds that specialize in eating fruit, especially berries. In fact, waxwings rely on fruit more than any other birds in the northern temperate latitudes, which is pretty remarkable. Birds of just about any other species in these regions would starve to death if they ate only fruit. Waxwings swallow whole berries, then poop out the seeds. So they are great at dispersing the seeds of plants. Fruiting plants and waxwings have been co-evolving together for a long time. The plants provide tasty meals to the birds, and the birds help the plants propagate. It's a mutualistic relationship. Waxwings help to maintain and spread the vegetation of their own habitats. The cedar in cedar waxwing refers to the fact that, historically, these birds were known to eat boatloads of berries from eastern red cedar, Juniperus virginiana. Apparently, it takes only about 12 minutes for an eastern red cedar berry to pass through the gut of a waxwing, from beak to cloaca. 12 minutes! Researchers estimate that, at that rate, these birds can eat about 53 red cedar berries per hour. And get this, red cedar seeds that have passed through the gut of a waxwing have germination rates 30% higher than seeds that weren't eaten. These days, all three waxwing species have a wider variety of fruits at their disposal. Because people, right? Cedar waxwings also eat the fruits of dogwood, strawberry, apple, rose, mulberry, honeysuckle, and raspberry. They chow down on mistletoe, mountain ash, crabapple, hawthorn, and the list goes on. Being a specialist frugivore requires some special adaptations. Sugary berries have pretty much no protein or fat. They're just filled with a bunch of simple sugars, like glucose and fructose. Waxwings have physiological adaptations that allow them to survive on this low-protein, low-fat diet. But to get the nutrients they need from fruit, waxwings have to eat a lot of it. Many other frugivorous animals are limited by the time it takes their guts to process their fruity meals. But we just talked about how it takes only 12 minutes for a berry to zoom through the bowels of a waxwing. These little buggers have short, simple digestive tracts that help them process food at a breakneck speed. A waxwing doesn't have a true crop to store food the way many other birds do. But it does have a section of its esophagus that basically does the same thing. It expands to hold berries. As one berry is being squished around in the gizzard, the next few are in the chamber, in the esophagus, waiting to be processed. When fruit is plentiful, a waxwing will stuff itself full. Pretty much every spare space in its little body will be filled with berries. the stomach, the esophagus, all the way up to the mouth. The bird is practically overflowing with fruit. Another diet-related challenge faced by waxwings is getting drunk, as in sloshed, plastered. Fruit can be fermented naturally by yeast in the environment. The byproduct of fermentation is one known and loved by humans around the world: ethanol, aka alcohol, booze, hard liquor, sauce, hooch. There is some scientific evidence that waxwings have adaptations for dealing with intoxication from fermented fruit. They have relatively large livers, for example. One of the many functions of the liver is detoxification. Waxwings also seem to be able to process ethanol more rapidly than some other bird species. But really, there doesn't seem to be much data out there yet. More research is needed. So yeah, waxwings sometimes get drunk. They accidentally eat a bunch of booze-infused berries, then they get all silly. The birds stumble around and act confused. They have a hard time flying. Drunk waxwings say things to each other like, "I love you, man. No, I'm serious. You're my best friend. I love you." Then they pass out and just lay there, sprawled out on the ground. Local news stations love it when there are reports of drunk birds. Here's a report from a station in Sacramento, California.
Did you hear that? Drunk birds are totally a thing. Trending at 5:30, some rambunctious birds getting a reputation in northern Minnesota. Police in Gilbert say they're responding to birds flying under the influence. Park rangers believe the birds are getting tipsy from eating fermented berries.
Much like your drunk friend that maybe spends the night on your couch, it threw up and felt better, gave it some carbs and some water, and it did the flight of shame home.
Sure, this all sounds adorable and hilarious. You wouldn't think there would be any negative consequences to getting wasted on alcohol. But unfortunately, there is a dark side for waxwings. Intoxicated birds can get injured or killed when they fall out of trees. Flying under the influence is especially dangerous, because waxwings sometimes smash into things like trees or windows, or they can simply freeze to death. But I guess waxwings have been dealing with the challenges of alcoholic berries for millions of years. On average, they're doing okay. Now, lest you think that these birds never eat anything but fruit, I should tell you that they do, in fact, supplement their diet with insects. In winter, it's pretty much all about fruit. But in summer, there are many more insects available, and waxwings will take advantage of this source of protein and fat. Flying insects like mayflies and dragonflies are caught midair. Waxwings will also pick insects like beetles off of leaves and twigs. The tables sometimes turn, and waxwings themselves become the prey. Their primary predators are bird-eating raptors like merlin, sharp-shinned hawk, or Cooper's hawk. And here's a crazy story. One day, a bunch of cedar waxwings were drinking water at the edge of a stock pond in Texas. There they were, peacefully as ever, sipping water. But little did the birds know they were being watched. Two bulbous golden eyes protruded just above the pond's surface. Suddenly, a green beast exploded out of the water, its enormous mouth wide open. It was a bullfrog. The frog grabbed the nearest waxwing in its jaws and swallowed it whole. True story. In this particular crime scene, researchers found multiple bullfrogs with bellies full of waxwings. Insane. Friggin' bullfrogs, man. They eat everything. There are some other birds that aren't predators of waxwings, but they might qualify as enemies. Northern mockingbirds, for example, like to stake claims on fruit trees in the fall and winter. A mockingbird fiercely defends its tree from other berry-munching birds. It can successfully kick the butts of one or several invaders. A mockingbird will sometimes even kill a waxwing by knocking it to the ground and stabbing it with its beak. I guess he wasn't kidding when he said, "You come near my tree, I kill you." But then here comes a ravenous flock of 200 waxwings. This cloud of fluttering, silky smooth beauties descends on the mockingbird's fruit tree, and all is soon lost. The aggressive mockingbird can't win against these overwhelming numbers. He just has to watch in shocked disbelief as his precious hoard of berries gets swallowed whole. 12 minutes later, insult is added to injury as each berry gets ejected as waxwing poop. Our last section today is about breeding in waxwings. These birds are socially monogamous. A single male and female pair up to raise a clutch or two every breeding season. Nature photographers love to get shots of waxwing courtship behavior. It's pretty darn cute, I have to say. Waxwing courtship goes something like this. A male and female perched on a branch hop towards each other. They hop forward, then away, then forward again. They touch bills sometimes, looking like they're kissing. The male usually offers a small edible item to the female, like a flower petal, bug, or berry. She takes it, hops away, then hops back. Then she gives the male his little gift back. They pass the item back and forth repeatedly, a dozen times or more. This courtship hopping display usually ends when the female finally eats the item offered by the male. I'll put a link in the show notes to a video of this courtship behavior between cedar waxwings. Waxwings in general breed relatively late in the summer. They do this so that there's plenty of ripe fruit available when their chicks hatch. A bonded pair of waxwings looks for a suitable nest site together, but it's the lady waxwing who makes the final decision. The spot is usually at a fork on a horizontal tree branch. The female builds the nest, mostly on her own, but the male will help bring construction material. It's a cup-shaped structure made of grass, twigs, cattail fluff, horsehair, and other such materials. After about 5 days, the pair of waxwings might have made over 2,000 trips to find nesting material. Or maybe fewer trips if they can pilfer material from the nests of some neighboring birds. Eventually, there are about 5 eggs in the nest, being incubated by the dutiful female. The male, meanwhile, brings her food like he's working for Uber Eats or Instacart or something. When he's not out looking for food, the male perches on a high branch out in the open, where he can survey his surroundings. He acts like a sentinel, protecting his mate and young from danger. After maybe a couple weeks, the chicks hatch. As you can imagine, these growing babies need protein and fat in their diet. Indeed, mom and dad feed the nestlings insects for a couple days. After that, it's fruit, fruit, and more fruit. How about a side of fruit with your fruit? And for dessert, I don't even need to tell you that it's fruit. Most other birds in temperate regions feed their chicks lots of protein-rich food like insects, not just for a couple days, but for weeks or months. But not waxwings. In fact, Bombycelids, the three waxwing species, are unique in that they're the only birds living outside the tropics that feed their chicks almost exclusively fruit. The baby waxwings must have physiological adaptations for growing muscle and bone and all of that without very much protein. Brown-headed cowbirds are brood parasites that sometimes lay eggs in cedar waxwing nests. What's a brood parasite, you ask? Well, how about you go listen to episode 12 of this podcast? The title is Brood Parasites Are Devious Birds. Anyway, cedar waxwings are pretty good at recognizing and rejecting cowbird eggs. They yell, "It's a trap!" Then they toss the egg unceremoniously out of their nest. But sometimes a nesting pair of cedar waxwings don't see through the ruse. They end up accepting the brown-headed cowbird egg as one of their own. The cowbird chick hatches and starts begging, demanding to be fed. Sort of like the giant carnivorous plant in the Little Shop of Horrors.
Feed me!
But the waxwings feed the cowbird chick pretty much nothing but fruit. So guess what happens? In this situation, the cowbird chick almost never survives. Unlike the baby waxwings, the cowbird chick doesn't have the physiology to survive on a diet of sugary fruits alone. Young waxwings fledge after 2 to 3 weeks in the nest. The parents keep stuffing their fledglings with berries for maybe another 10 days. But then mom and dad say bye-bye and split. Well, I guess the Japanese waxwings would probably say sayonara. But don't feel too bad for the waxwing youngsters abandoned by their parents. They'll find some other immature waxwings and form flocks. They all stick together as they face their first winter. The oldest waxwing ever recorded by ornithologists was 7 years old. But most of these birds aren't so lucky. Research has shown that in some populations, more than half of the waxwings don't survive from 1 year to the next. They face dangers like hawks, selfish mockingbirds, poison berries, and, apparently, even bullfrogs. Many other songbird species tend to return to the same breeding sites where they were born, or to where they bred successfully in seasons past. I mean, it worked before, right? But waxwings are less likely to have any such fidelity to where they were born or to where they bred in the past. This is probably another example of waxwing biology that reflects their fruity diet. At any given location, fruit availability is unpredictable from year to year, so it makes little sense to return to the same breeding site. Waxwings think it's better to wander far and wide. Get together in a flock with your peace-loving pals and scour the land for that next patch of sweet, sweet berries. After listening to this episode, I hope you'll agree that waxwings, birds in the family Bombycillidae, are the bomb. But maybe you already felt that way. Oh, and don't say that in the airport. Waxwings are the bomb. Thanks for taking the time to learn about birds with me today. You could have spent that same time staring at a wall or talking to your garrulous coworker on the phone. Life is short. Your time is valuable, so I really appreciate it that you're here with me. I also really, really appreciate my supporters on Patreon. Their monthly contributions are a big part of what makes this whole thing possible. A special shout out to my newest patron, Alan Chang. Hi, Alan, and thanks so much for the generous support. Anyone can become a supporter of this podcast. Well, anyone with a little extra cash, that is. If you fit that description and are wondering how you can help me out, just check out my Patreon page over at patreon.com/scienceofbirds. And if you have something you'd like to share with me, you can reach me by electronic mail. Maybe you have a comment about the podcast, or you want to tell me the name of your car, or about some regrettable things you've said to your friend while drunk on fermented berries. In any case, my address is ivan@scienceofbirds.com. You can check out the show notes for this episode, which is number 65, on the Science of Birds website, scienceofbirds.com. I'm your host, Ivan Philipson. Thanks again for being here, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Peace.